This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome. I am your host, as always, Shane Tolt. It's very nice to have you on this lovely Monday, or whenever you might be listening to this. Now, this week we have a bit more of a serious episode. I speak with Marielle Loveland of the band Candy Hearts. And what's interesting about this is I got an email from her manager, who is a buddy of mine, asking if I would like to have her on the show. And I said, of course, I would love to have her. I always like to have female guests. This will be the third female guest we've had. And I think it's important, you know, in this, you know, male-dominated scene that we tend to be in with singers, to have as many females as possible. So I jumped at the chance, but I hadn't read the latest news about Marielle in the press. A few days ago, Marielle spoke out about some abuse she faced from their tour manager on last year's Warped Tour. And I encourage you to read that statement. If you want to pause this right now and go online and check it out, you can. And the tour manager in question also made a rebuttal, and Marielle since has also made another statement. So there's a lot going on. There's a lot of back and forth. It's a very complicated situation. But most of all, this is an important issue in our scene right now. There's a lot of talk about violence against women in our scene. I bring it up in this podcast a few times, some incidents with Front Porch Step, Johnny Craig last year on the Warped Tour. So this is something we all need to take very seriously. So I think it's important right now for you guys to listen to this, for you guys to understand that our scene isn't completely safe and that there are problems, and hopefully things are getting better, not worse. But when you hear about these things, they are very troubling and they are very disgusting, and it is something that affects me personally, doing this as my career now for so many years. But anyway, before we get into it, I want to encourage you guys to feel free to get in touch with me. The email address is really easy. It's leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. I read every email I get. I try to respond, although some weeks are much harder than others, but I do read everything. So hit me up on there. Also, we have a Twitter going. It's @leadsingersyn, S-Y-N. We're on Instagram, @leadsingersyndrome. I actually posted a picture from an old podcast last week. Someone found the census fail ass pass. So make sure you get on Instagram so you can see some relics from past shows. Oh, and I almost forgot. I am also now on Snapchat. It's not the Lead Singer Syndrome Snapchat. It's just my personal account. But feel free to check it out. It's Real Shane Told. I know it's a bit of a douchey handle, but Shane Told was taken, so what am I going to do? And lastly, if you want to support the show, it's super easy. Do you buy things online? Do you know what Amazon is? It's a great website because they sell everything. So to support the show, it's really, really simple. All you got to do is go to leadsingersyndrome.com/Amazon. That'll take you right to the Amazon homepage. You log in as normal, and anything you buy, our show gets 4%. It's called the affiliate program. It's really, really great. And hey, if you got a big purchase coming up, if you're going to buy a lawnmower or something, can you buy a lawnmower on Amazon? I bet you can. You buy everything on there. So whatever you're going to buy, please use that link. It costs you absolutely nothing, and it really can go a long way to helping our show grow. Oh, and if you really, really like the show, make sure you go on iTunes, write a review, preferably 5 stars, because that helps us with like chart position and all that crap that you probably don't care about because you already know about the show. But we're trying to make this thing grow, get better opportunities. So please go on iTunes, write a review. It would really help us out. Anyways, without further ado, here is Lead Singer Syndrome episode number 30 and my conversation with Marielle Loveland of Candy Hearts. You are a song in my head. My voice is sore. I'm singing it as you cross off miles and minutes takes. The same white lines that brought you here will take you away. What is it, 10:30 in the morning? morning right now. This is not good.
Sorry.
This is not good for old Shano. Yeah. I'm recently single, and you know, I was in a relationship for like 4.5 years where, you know, I like mostly just hung out with like my girlfriend, you know, and you know, I didn't go out a lot, and I'd see buddies and stuff. And now that like, I guess now that I'm single and I can kind of do whatever I want, I don't really know yet. I don't really know how to say no to like my buddies being like, yeah, come out and like drink and come out and hang out. So I'm just like, okay, yeah, what, where? Sure, I'll be there. Like, I'll be there in 10 minutes. And it's starting to sort of catch up with me a little bit on some of these mornings. Like, what is it, Friday morning today? Like Thursday night, I'm out until I don't even want to admit the time. But, you know, so, yeah, so I apologize if on this podcast I'm a little groggy. It's my own fault.
I just woke up 10 minutes ago.
I'm sorry?
Sorry, I just woke up 10 minutes ago.
Oh, okay, yeah, so you're with me. Yeah, you're with me. Did you have a rough night? Well, you live in New York, right? Or New Jersey or something?
Actually, New Jersey, yeah.
New Jersey, beautiful, lovely, beautiful state. It's sarcasm.
Yeah, it's nice. Fine.
No, we always have, like, our polls of, like, you know, because we travel around a lot, we always talk about, okay, what's the worst state? And I'm like, I don't know, maybe like Ohio or something. And my friend's,
right?
My friend's like, are you crazy? It's New Jersey. It's not even a question. New Jersey. It's like, New Jersey's not that bad. I love New Jersey.
I mean, it's pretty regular. It gets a bad rap because, you know, the area around Newark and around the airport is really just factories and it's gross.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, they got to
like,
take
the
all
the rest
this-
of it is like, really nice suburbs.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I think, you know, there's like also like there was that whole period of time with like the Jersey Shore stuff. Like the, like I'm not talking about the Jersey Shore itself. Like people don't think of
yeah.
I'm talking about the stupid
TV
show.
Such a bad rap.
Oh, all yeah.
People were from Staten Island though.
Oh, were they? I don't I don't know that, but
yeah, no, that I mean most of them were from Staten Island. They weren't even from New Jersey.
Yeah, that's super funny. Yeah, I guess they just filmed the show, like, on the Jersey Shore, right? But, like, yeah, I mean, the Jersey Shore is, like, nice, you know? And, like, I think of – when I think of New Jersey, I think of, like – and, like, you know, Asbury Park and the Jersey Shore, I think of, like, Springsteen. I don't think of whatever the hell that fucking guy's name, Pauly D or whatever. Like, so I don't know. It's,
well, I mean, there are trashy parts of the Jersey Shore, but – those parts are kind of fun.
Right. I've been to Atlantic City a couple times, too. I mean, that's – never mind. That place is horrible.
yeah.
And now all I can think about is the fact that I just called Ohio the worst state and all these, like, Ohio State fans – oh, I'm a Michigan fan, too. Take that, Ohio. And all those Ohio people are going to be just, like, hating me, calling the hate line. Ripping me apart to shreds. So anyways, this is getting a little out of hand. So I got to ask you right off the bat, you've been, I don't even know how to say it. You've been through some stuff over the last couple days, you know, with the statement you made about going through the Warped Tour incident of like, you know, abuse. And, you know, now I know over the last like little while, there's been statements back and forth and stuff. So I just kind of want to ask you how you're holding up with this, because it must be pretty emotionally draining for you to have to kind of deal with this. So how is that going for you?
I mean, to be honest, I'm really not doing that well.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I said what I had to say in my two statements, and I felt like, you know, his statement was, I mean, it was completely false.
Right.
There were small truths in there, you know, like I yelled at him and I did yell at him. Maybe I flirted with him to pacify his anger. But I didn't do anything that harmful. He's in that statement claiming that he's like the victim of abuse. Well, that's what I said, but I didn't name anybody and I didn't name my friends or my family that he named.
Right.
And I didn't name my boyfriend and I didn't name Kevin Lyman, and I didn't say people said anything, and he's saying all of these people, including my mother,
yeah,
said things, which it's not true. I'm not bipolar. If I was bipolar, I certainly wouldn't, that wouldn't be a hidden fact or something, like some twist to the story. Like, everyone would know I was bipolar if I was bipolar, and I'm not. And he was just you know, saying, I don't know why Marielle would make up these lies about me. And then he said, like, oh, I'm not going to speak on for what, like, I'm not going to speak about what her motives were. And then he spent three paragraphs writing about how I conspired with Substream magazine to create this story that I just posted on my Tumblr without naming anyone, to sell tickets to a solo career that I don't even have and I'm not promoting because it doesn't exist.
Yeah, I read that. I read his statement. Yeah.
Yeah.
Even if what he said is some truth, there's some truth to it. There's obviously some, I'm sure there's some exaggeration because, you know, he says things like he never raised his voice and stuff, which in my opinion, and let me take it from my perspective. The Seaway guys are from my hometown, like Oakville, Ontario. We grew up at, like, my mom goes to the rec center, like, gym with one of the guys from Seaway's mom. So I know all those guys. I was on Warp Tour.
Well, they didn't do this.
No, I know they didn't do that. I'm just putting the perspective, yeah, you know, from my angle, because I'm going to talk about this. But, you know, for him to say, like, there was no, he never raised his voice and stuff, I mean, that part is very hard to believe, because anybody in that situation, I think, would have to fight fire with fire a little bit, you know, even, you know. So that whole thing, to me, was pretty hard to believe. And the only thing is, like, it's a tough situation for everybody, especially for you, because you... You know, you made the decision to, after saying basically that you thought about this every day and you were trying to do the right thing, you know, so that must have been very difficult for you. But, you know, you say, like, you didn't name names. Well, obviously people were going to figure out it was him, right?
Yeah, but I wasn't bringing, I know him so well.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe I don't know him so well, because I would never have dated him if I knew he was like that. And there are just so many things that I found out during our relationship about him and that are just completely insane. And so many things about his family that, you know, like, I felt bad for him. He was having a hard time, and I didn't mention anything about his family or anything like that. And he's saying I had all these motives to not tell on him or whatever, that it's a lie because I needed trailer space when there are tons of trailers around, like, it's just kind of, you know, more of the ways that he was, like, holding me hostage. And I know the people who were there see me yelling at him, because I did.
Right.
And he probably didn't. He definitely yelled back one time, but when he knew that I was yelling to bring attention to him because I was scared, he didn't. He's not an idiot.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's just, like, from the people next to him, it looks like that I yelled at him, and that's what people saw. But people don't see the months and months of abuse and that things he said to me in the text I have that I would never release to the public, where he admits that he treats me that way.
But don't you feel like, and I hate to say this, like, you know, this back and forth, like I hate to use the term he said, she said, because that's such a shitty, like, way to put this. And it's obviously deeper than that, especially, you know, for you and what you went through. But don't you think almost at this point, after reading his statement and him, you know, you said, like, he is, you know, talking about your mother and stuff, like, don't you think you almost should just put it all out there to kind of start to set the record straight so you can, you know, move on from this? And, like, you know, because you did start the ball rolling. So don't you think, in a way, like, you should just finish it and get everything out there, like, and then let it sort itself out? Or do you think you're able just to cut this off and you can deal with it emotionally when there's people that don't know what to believe at this point? And that must be so troubling for you.
I don't really know what to do. I mean, I wanted to put it all out there. You know, I wanted to show the text where he said that he's not embarrassed by his behavior because he only treats me this way, and there's something inside of him that is sparked when he sees me, that's this rage that he doesn't know how to control. And, like,
wow.
I was advised it's probably best to not, you know, I don't really know what the answer is.
I
just put this thing on my Tumblr, you know, and honestly, I didn't really think that many people read it.
I think a lot of people read it.
I underestimated, because I haven't been doing that much because I've been at home, you know,
yeah,
trying to get over this and trying to feel okay again, not scared to like be around. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
Just be around like the people in our scene who are friends with him and stuff. And I guess I kind of forgot that people actually read the stuff that I'm writing, because when there's nothing to say, people don't say anything.
I mean, yeah. I mean,
so I was kind of feeling like I didn't have that big of a platform.
Well, I just don't think that. Yeah, that's just not true. I mean, you obviously you do. I mean, you're the singer of a, you know, a popular band that played the Warped Tour, that's making records, that's touring all over the place. Like, of course, people are going to listen to you, and people are going to take.
I guess I just don't see myself that way.
Well, I don't know what to tell you. Like,
yeah, I know.
You know, it is. It is what it is, and, you know, obviously, like, people want to support you.
I thought he would just say it wasn't true. I didn't think that he would, you know, say direct quotes from Kevin Lyman that he just made up, or things that I said that's, like, literally made up. Like, I wasn't there during his meeting. I was there during mine, but I'm not going to directly quote anybody.
Well, you know, there's
if
been...
If they wanted to say that and they wanted to support me, they would.
Well, there's been a lot... of stuff like this over the past, I'm going to say the past year. Like, you know, I was on Warped Tour with you in 2015. There were, you know, we had those town hall meetings. I don't know if you attended them. You know, there was one where Johnny Craig, you know, there was an incident with slaves and they ended up sending slaves home. There was obviously the Front Porch Step, incident, you know, where he played a show. So there were all these incidents, and I think that people in the scene now are very sensitive, and they should be sensitive to these kinds of actions and things. So I think that from his perspective, I think, you know, he's like, well, shit, I, you know, this happened, I have to protect myself, because who's gonna hire me if they think I'm a person that's abusing females. So I understand completely why he felt the need to make a statement so long-winded like that, to try to get his side out. And obviously, I don't know how much of it is true, how much of it is false, and I don't know really anything that happened, except I just can't imagine what you're going through, because this is something that you put out there to try to get off your chest, and now it's just like it's gotten kind of crazy.
Yeah, I just don't even understand how people would think that anyone would do this for publicity. Like, it's literally it would be the worst idea to get publicity out of, you know, making something up like this.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, for sure. Yeah, I don't know. Is there anything else that you want to say about it? I mean, I know, like, we're not going to spend the whole podcast talking about this, but obviously this is very recent news. And this is, like, kind of going on. So I just think, you know, if we didn't bring it up, or if we glossed over it, you know, I don't think it would be, you know, whatever. I'm not even a journalist, but, you know, journalistic integrity kind of thing. You know, we obviously, if something going on, it would be ridiculous not to bring it up.
I don't know, man. I've been up all night. I'm just getting assaulted with tons of messages saying I need psychiatric help, and, like, you know.
So there's a lot of people.
It's a lot.
So there's a lot of people coming at you, like, with, like, saying they don't believe you and stuff.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and I mean, even people who are my friends who saw me yell at him, but they don't know the whole story because they know his side.
Right.
And I know that he said that he's going to get people to speak up who, you know, apparently go along with his side. I don't really know what that is, because it took him 3 days to make up this this thing, and he just really, I mean, there were a lot of low blows that I feel like it was just a perpetuation of his abuse. Like, it's just another way, just I should have known that he would do that in that way. Because he's always tried to make me feel just terrified and scared and crazy. He's always tried to make me feel like I'm crazy.
Yeah. It's going to be very troubling to feel that way. It can be very troubling to see a person that you care about, you know, treat you with so little dignity, you know?
It's horrible. And, like, you know, he had to bring Warped Tour into it and everything. And I didn't want to mention that because of what you said, how last year was, like, the year for that.
Right.
And, like, I didn't want to ruin my chances of ever playing it again.
Right. So you feel like now, because that's on out on blast and you're talking about this, that, that Lyman might just say no Candy Hearts just because of, you know, something like, oh, they're causing drama or something. Is that
yeah.
That's your fear?
I'm terrified of that. That's why I never said anything for like a year.
Yeah, that's sorry. No. Hey, it's okay. It's okay. I mean, here's the thing about Kevin Lyman, and I've known Kevin Lyman for a very, very long time. I've actually did two Warped Tour episodes on this podcast. I'm a big supporter of Warped Tour. And I'm not scared to say it. I've gone to every Warped Tour since 1997, either performing or playing. And
wow, that's a lot.
yeah, that's gonna be. It's like 20 years or something. I'm really old. And but with Warped Tour, here's the thing about Kevin. He never cuts anyone out. And sometimes to a fault, you know, like he is the king of giving people second chances. Like he gave Johnny Craig chance after chance after chance. The front porch step incident, which we talked about, he actually let the kid play, which in almost everyone's opinion, I think Kevin would even say that was a mistake, you know, but he has this thing where he wants to give people second chances. A lot of the people that work on Warped Tour, stage manager stuff, right? A lot of the stage managers and stuff, they're ex criminals, they're ex, you know, convicts, and they've been in prison, you know, for long periods of time. And Kevin wants to help these people out, and I think that's a beautiful trait of Kevin Lyman. So for you to say, I'm worried now that because this Warped Tour, no one's saying anything bad about Warped Tour. You're saying good things. They handled the situation professionally. They took it seriously.
Yeah, but I'm just always afraid that people are going to think that, you know, I'm annoying or a problem.
Well,
I was told that for like a year every day. And that's always just it. A fear of mine because I'm an anxious person.
I don't think people are going to take that approach at all to this or think that. I think a lot of people have gone through what you've gone through. A lot of people are understanding to your situation, and I don't think you should not have to worry about this affecting your career, you know, because you chose to speak up about something that was troubling you. I think that's disgusting if that actually happens, and I hate to hear you say you've been up all night and you can't sleep, and you know people are just saying things to you that are horrible, because that's
I slept 4 hours and I have to record all day. I'm pretty crappy.
So you're recording, are you recording an album right now?
Yeah, I am. I'm recording now we went right from that to me talking about recording an album, and it sounds like I just use that stuff on my album.
No. That's here's the thing. Like I do these podcasts, and things tend to jump around. You know, like the way that your mind sort of can wander. That's sometimes how these podcasts go. But look, I'm not trying to change the subject. We can talk. Obviously, I want to talk about everything going on in your mind. I'm sorry, I keep interrupting you. Go ahead.
No, sorry. It's hard on the phone because I can't see your face, you know. You can't see when you're going to talk.
No, it's fine. It's a common problem.
Yeah. Talking about my album is fine. I'm actually, you know, I said my statements. I said what he did was made up. 90% made up. I'm not saying I was an angel, but I'm definitely saying I wasn't abusive.
Right.
And if I did hurt his feelings in any way that affected him, well, I did intentionally call him a pussy. I will own up to that. And I know that I called him that because I know that he's sensitive about his manhood, and I was just trying to get him away from me. And that's stupid. People fight in their relationships sometimes. Not that you should ever call someone that. But I'm not saying that was right, but
right. What
he said is just... He's just trying to turn around what I said and be like, well, actually, she did that.
Right.
Which is crazy. Anyway, we can talk about my album.
Yeah, no, just to finish up on that topic, like, I mean, I guess, like, it's difficult now because, you know, like I said, you kind of put that out there and you felt like you had to, and now it's sort of, it's blown back, you know, with all this stuff, and it's like, where do you go from here? Like, yeah, do you think you need to try to just squash it and cut it off, or do you think you actually need to say, hey, like, to stick up for yourself and defend yourself and be like, yeah, this is, like, what was said, you know? Or, I mean, obviously there's probably fear of that too, because then you're putting more of your own personal information out there. Cause obviously if you're going to say, like, you know, show text messages he sent you or whatever to kind of talk about what happened, then you have to show you the text messages that you sent too, which in some ways might not be that proud of. Right. So that must all just be very difficult right now to know what to
do.
Yeah.
I mean, there are definitely things I said to him when I read back looking for these texts, because I knew he said it. I really was like, I'm not crazy. Like, am I crazy? Did this not happen?
Wow, yeah.
Because he's, you know, tried to make me feel like that's what people do when they abuse people. But so I was going back and I was like, I found out. I was like, I knew he said this, and I knew he said this on this day. I remember that he ruined my birthday for me. And there's some stuff that I'm not proud I said to him. Like, I mean, any time where I ever said that I love him makes me cringe, you know? Like,
right.
I mean, I obviously loved him like a friend, but, you know, I don't hire people that I don't really like or feel comfortable with, and I really did trust him. So, you know, I don't want people to read texts of me saying that I love him or that, you know, flirting
right,
with him in any way or anything like that to make him less angry, because, I mean, I think it's a pretty common tactic of girls to, like, flirt with guys to make guys less angry or, you know, to sort of pacify people who are
right
really just wild cards, I guess. But, you know, I mean, as far as anything goes in text, like, that's the extent of it. Like, yeah, maybe I said something nasty to him and then flirted with him, which was regrettable, but that's why, yeah. I mean, you're right. Like, I don't want people, and, you know, I feel like there's a certain, like, point where it's, like, a lot of this is going back, like, from our personal relationship, which has nothing to do with this incident. I mean, it does have something to do with the incident because, you know, Warped Tour was the time that I finally chose to stand up to it.
Right.
After months and months of just keeping quiet and being beaten down, and, like, even when he was our tour manager, just, I remember one day he looked through my phone and, like, thought I was flirting with someone because I left at our merch table, and, like, he was just, like, screaming at me, and I had a panic attack in the venue, and it was just, like,
this is Warped Tour?
No.
Oh, okay.
This is another tour that we hired him on while we were dating.
Right.
And I just remember I was just, like, throwing up in the bathroom because the stuff that he said made me getting a panic attack. And it's like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have said that. I don't know. I feel like I'm digging myself in the hole talking about this, but
no, I think,
you know, Warped Tour was when I finally stood up to it.
I think it's fine. You've gone through so much, and it's, yeah, it's really a hard situation, and, you know, I just
people
hope
are saying, like, I looked at shows mentally not right, or that something was off about me, and it's like,
and that's what it was.
Well, yeah, something was off about me. I've been
right. Yeah, that. I mean,
I've been so upset.
Yeah,
for a year.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. Here's the thing.
Touring a lot.
Well, here's the thing, Marielle. Like, you know, you got this out, and obviously now it's hard. But ultimately, I think saying what you say, what you're saying, and getting it out there for you personally is going to be a beneficial thing than holding it inside, you know, like you have been for almost a year. You know, I think that's important for you, you know, to get through this and move on.
Yeah, I hope so.
Okay.
Anyway, well, I'd love to talk about anything
anyways, we got lots to talk about.
Like,
no,
you know, why I went on this podcast.
No, I know. But I, I do. So you're recording right now. You are recording in New Jersey. Who's producing the album?
I'm actually working with two different people right now.
Oh, cool.
I'm working with Alex. He used to play in the kick drums. They're on Hopeless. And I'm working with my friend Andrew Fuchel, who is a member of Field Mouse, and he does a lot of stuff with MC Chris.
Okay.
And I'm trying so hard to get in with Paul Levitt because I am the biggest fan of his work. But we haven't been able to make our schedules work yet.
I see. I'm trying to understand this process. Like, are you collaborating with these people, like kind of like co-writing? Or like, do you have kind of an album written and you're recording like different songs with different people? Because obviously not everyone's in the same room at the same time.
Yeah, I know. Well, the way that I've worked is that I've written all the songs. So I'm definitely open where if I like go in and they have like some ideas of like a song that I'm not bringing in, I would be totally open to that. That hasn't happened right now, but if it does, I'm totally, that would be cool. But right now, I've written a ton of songs. I have like 20 songs. I'm trying to record like six.
six, yeah.
And so I've just been going in with these songs that I've written. And these producers are really helping me co-write it and like shape out the rest of the sound from, because I have like my acoustic guitar, my voice, my ideas of what I want it to be.
Yeah.
And you know, they're really helping collaborate with me. And I think it's cool because I'm working with a lot of people who have done a lot with electronic kind of music.
Oh, yeah.
And I wanted to add some of those elements into what I'm doing. And I chose producers specifically who were great at that kind of stuff, because writing that kind of stuff is a little bit of a weakness of mine. And I wanted to really incorporate that into my album. So definitely having their opinions and ideas has been amazing.
Yeah, that's interesting you said about electronic music, because I'm the same way. Like, you know, I remember back in the day when, you know, that stuff sort of started getting like popular, where you could, you know, make music on a computer, and everybody's learning about like Reason or Ableton. Like, there's all those programs that came out, and I could never figure them out. And that's the same with me. Like, it maybe for me it's good, because I think if I was really good at that stuff, Silverstein would have a lot more electronic influences, and we don't, just because I was never could figure it out. But that totally makes sense to work with a producer that has strengths where your weaknesses are in any facet. So I think that's a really smart approach.
Yeah, it's been cool. I haven't gotten in too much though, because, you know, these people are donating their time to me, because, you know, like I said, before our contract with Bridge 9 ended, we fulfilled it. We were not dropped, like I had been told in the news. And I haven't talked to anyone really about, like, haven't talked to them or anything about putting something new out. But I mean, they're amazing, but they're a hardcore label.
Yeah, that's obviously, like, when I saw that you guys were on Bridge 9, I was like, oh, okay, that's, you know, Madball, Strike Anywhere, Candy Hearts, okay. Like,
yeah, you know. I mean, I think that's sick. And I think that my ethics and my personality definitely fit
right
with that. But our actual sounds, not so much.
No. It can be tricky being the odd band out, you know, on a label. You know, definitely.
Yeah.
That's never easy.
I definitely liked it. But now maybe I'm looking to not be the odd person out. And I'm looking to maybe move away a little bit from the scene that we're currently in.
Right, right. So, yeah, I mean,
hoping
obviously
to maybe, like, do more indie tours maybe, or maybe fit with, well, I know we've toured with Modern Baseball and bands like that before, and I love them, and that's more where I want to be than the bro-y pop punk mosh circle, because I don't really feel like we fit in there.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with all that stuff is, I guess, you can't always choose exactly where you want to be.
You can't choose, because I didn't even know any of this stuff existed.
Right.
Until I was there, and I was like, oh, I didn't even know there was a seed for this.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, no, it's one thing to say, oh, we want to do these kind of tours, and then yeah, it's a whole other thing to actually get them, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I've always been saying, I want to do those kind of tours, and like, oh, yeah, I want to tour with Best Coast, but, you know, like, I've always been saying that.
Yeah.
But those aren't the tours that we've gotten. And I know, like, our last record is super pop-punk, but our stuff before that, I feel like, isn't. And I don't know. I mean, we definitely fit with bands like Real Friends and those kind of bands. Like, it's been great. But, you know, there's half the people there who want to mosh and half the people who really like us. And it would be nice to be somewhere where, you know, everybody was going to like us.
No, I mean, that's the problem, though. And like, I know from experience, because with my band, like, we're not... Like, we're a heavier band, right? Like, we have screaming and stuff, and we have, like, heavy stuff, but we're not a metal band. So we can't tour with metal bands, but then we can't really tour with, like, pop-punk bands either because we're too heavy for that. So we literally...
You are kind of in that in-between.
We literally don't fit in with anybody, except, like, the other, like, there's not... I mean, it used to be there was quite a few bands that had that vibe, like, similar to ours. Now there's, like, not really that many. So we're always in that category of, like, not really sure where we stand. And it's hard for us to completely win over a room than if you're just like, oh, it's a pop-punk tour. We're a pop-punk band. Everyone there loves pop-punk. Here we go. You know, 500 out of 500 people in that room are going to be stoked on our band. That has never happened with Silverstein. And it's probably never going to happen with you guys because...
Yeah.
And that's not always a bad thing because you don't have to have a full room of people that like you. You just have to have a small select few of people that love you. And that's the key to all this, in my opinion. So let me ask you, I think so too. Yeah. Yeah. Let me ask you. So you say you're going to incorporate more electronic music. You're kind of talking about the past direction of Candy Hearts. Moving forward, do you think that these songs are going to take a dramatic turn? Is the music going to change? Like, what can your fans kind of expect?
Well, it definitely still sounds like us.
Well, it's still you singing, so.
Yeah, it's still me singing. It's still the lyrics that I write and the melodies that I write. I think, you know, maybe it's a little bit more pop-leaning. Like modern pop. Like, not right. Pop-punk, but, like, actual pop.
Yep. That's cool. So, right now you're not really sure when it's going to come out or even what label it's going to come out on. So you're kind of in a... I'd say kind of maybe a bit of a fun, exciting place that you just don't really know, you know, what's next.
Well, for someone with anxiety, it's terrifying and awful. But for a normal person, I feel like it would probably be fun and exciting.
Right. Well, life is an adventure, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So are you going back out on the road at any point, or are you just focusing on...
Yeah, I'm leaving in like 3 weeks.
Oh, wow.
We're doing an acoustic tour because when we were on Warped Tour, we released an acoustic record. And it had two new songs and like a couple from our last record that we arranged acoustically. And I never really got to support it at all. So I decided that while I'm writing this kind of stuff, it would be really nice to just go out and play these acoustic songs. And it's also easy because, you know, the guys don't have to take off from work and only I have to go.
Oh, so you're doing it alone. You're doing it alone. Okay.
Yeah. Well, originally I didn't want to do it alone. Originally it was going to be me and our guitarist, but I think to save costs, everyone on the tour cut down and we're all traveling in one van.
Oh yeah.
So it didn't really make sense for me to bring someone else.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's rad. I started a solo project myself, and I'm kind of trying to think about what I'm going to do for the live show, because I just recorded 3 songs and put it out on a 7-inch. But, yeah, I'm kind of wondering, too, if what the approach is, if it's going to be just like I'm going to get in a car by myself and play, or if I'm going to bring in, like, instrumentation or whatever. And it's, like, it's kind of difficult to know, you know, what to do. But, you know, you talked a little bit about like anxiety you have and stuff. Like, have you done a lot of solo stuff, like where
no,
you're alone on stage?
No, never.
So are you a little nervous about that?
I recently did like two shows that way to sort of practice and prepare myself for what it can feel like, you know, and I'm not trying to pursue a solo career at all, and doing some sort of thing like this where I'm all alone is absolutely terrifying. And I'm doing it because I really think it would be special for fans, and I really think it would be the best thing that our band can do right now while we're, you know, waiting to put out new music. But that's the only reason I'm doing it.
Absolutely.
Because it's terrifying.
Is it a long tour?
No, it's like 2.5 weeks,
oh, okay.
I think.
Okay.
So, I don't know. I think it'll be fine.
I'm sure it'll be fine.
I'm practicing in my room and filming myself practice, and I really like how it sounds. But, yeah, it's really scary to get up in front of people by yourself, especially, like, where there's not all the loud music around you to cover if you mess up.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Every time I've done acoustic, like solo acoustic stuff, it's always like funny to me how the thing that's liberating to me, but also scary, is like, if I want to just slow the song down for a second, like just, you know what I mean? Just like take a second and like drop the tempo. I can do that, you know? And like that stuff is like, this isn't something people really ever talk about, but like, obviously when you're playing with other people, you can't do that. But when you're playing by yourself, you have that luxury, which is a blessing and a curse, because at the same time, like if you stop playing guitar for a second with Candy Hearts, there's other stuff going on. It isn't going to sound like a total train wreck, but if you're acoustic and you do that, it's a train wreck. So
yeah, like if I get flustered when we're playing live, I can just stop playing if I get distracted.
Right.
Or if I'm like, we're playing and like, I'm like, oh crap, what am I doing? Where am I?
Exactly.
I can just not play and reevaluate for a second, but not so much when it's acoustic.
Yeah. No, it's true.
Which is probably how people will see me on stage now singing acoustic, being like, what the hell am I doing?
That's interesting that you said.
Having to start again.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting you said the thing about filming yourself playing. I've never thought about doing that. Like, is that something you've done before?
I feel like it comes from a place of extreme paranoia. Like, but I have watched our live performances before, and I think it really helped me grow as a band. And I know when we started, as most fans, when they start, we're a little bit sloppy, and I didn't have the best stage presence.
Right.
You know, watching myself perform has really helped me kind of become aware of what I look like and what I sound like. And especially because when, not so much for acoustic, but when you're playing in a band and your monitors aren't working in your ears.
Yeah.
And they're not working in the front, you don't know how you sound. So if you watch a video, you can hear how you sounded, which sometimes is terrifying if, you know, you couldn't hear yourself sing.
It's the same way, like, people always say, oh, my God, I hate the sound of my voice on tape, like, recorded. People hear their voice back. They're like, do I sound like that? Like, ugh.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same thing, I imagine, with doing that and filming it. It's funny. It seems like an obvious thing you would do, like, to watch a video of yourself performing to get better. And I've just never done that. But maybe I should. But it's like, I've seen video or whatever and be like, oh yeah, I guess like that's what I look like.
Would be like the biggest band ever if you guys had just done that from the start.
Oh my God, I know. Fuck.
Instead
this
of
is
just a little bit big.
Can I go back, please? Man. Yeah, no, it seems like an obvious thing, but I don't know why I thought that was interesting that you said that, but maybe I will start doing this.
I definitely like to look at different like vocal techniques when I play and how it's coming off, because you can't hear it inside your head the way that it actually sounds, I feel like. So I've definitely been like, I'm working on a Justin Bieber cover, and I definitely...
Oh, which one?
Crap, what's the name of that song? Love Yourself.
Oh, yeah, okay.
That's on the radio right now.
Oh, I know it.
Yeah, my boyfriend taught me how to play it, and I was like, well, he was just playing it, and I was like, teach me how to play this, and he's like, you should play this on your tour. And I was like, yeah, you're right. And then I had to completely relearn it in a different key because it didn't work for my voice.
Right,
but now it does.
He's a dude. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. But I've been telling myself saying that so I can kind of see how to approach it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. completely makes sense. I want to ask you how you kind of got into this, you know, world. Did you, when you were a kid, obviously there was some point when you decided music was very important to you and you wanted to play it. So how did that happen? When did that happen and how did that happen?
I feel like I was a little bit of a late bloomer when it comes to like professionally pursuing music. I definitely, you know, when I was younger, I remember that, well, I loved music, of course. I loved the Beatles when I was a little baby and the Beach Boys and then Alanis Morissette. And then when I was a preteen, I absolutely adored Christina Aguilera and I wanted to be her. And, you know, and think of stuff like that. And then one day on the radio, I heard this song and I was like, what is this song? I've never heard anything like this before. And I love this. And so I listened to the radio over and over and over again every day after school.
What song was it?
I think I was 13 or 14. The song was My Friends Over You by Newfound Glory, which I finally discovered after weeks and weeks of waiting for them to play the song.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Because it was back when, you know, it was radios and your cars didn't tell you what song was playing. And
for sure. There was no Shazam.
Google wasn't really popular and I was also like 13 years old. So I was mostly playing like StarCraft Diablo on my computer, not searching cool stuff. But so I found that song and then that opened up a whole world to me, like Dashboard Confessional and Brand New and Taking Back Sunday and all of those kind of bands and Blink-182, of course. But I feel like that's in a category of its own because that was always like, I mean, that was more of like in the pop scene
right
at the time.
Right. Yep.
I think it was like more on MTV and on the radio and stuff like that. And I know Newfound Glory was.
Newfound Glory was, but they weren't at the level of Blink-182, no. I could totally see, like, radio play, it existed for them, but not, like, anywhere near the level of Blink-182.
Yeah, exactly. And I remember during that time, like, Enter the Sandman was, like, the big one. So I'd listened to that a million times before I found this Newfound Glory song. And I cannot stand Enter the Sandman, though.
What, Metallica?
Yeah.
That's funny because, like, basically Metallica is the reason I play music.
Metallica's fine, but after waiting for that song to come on, they played that Metallica song every, like, 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And it really soured me towards it.
There's certain radio bands, like, especially, a lot of people don't know this, but, like, I live in Canada, and they actually have to play 35% Canadian music on the radio. It's called CanCon.
Oh, I heard that.
Yeah.
And
so
that's cool.
It's cool, except you know how many shitty Canadian bands there are, like Nickelback? Do you know how many times, if I was doing what you did, I would have to listen to Nickelback to hear that Newfound Glory song?
You know, I have to say, though, I feel like Nickelback is not as offensive as people say, and I would rather listen to that than Enter the Sandman.
Oh, come on. Get out of here. No way. First of all, it's Enter Sandman.
Well, at the time that Nickelback
came
the
out. Not The Sandman. First of all, the Black Album. Black Album is great, okay? Black Album is great. I celebrate.
Listen, I'm not saying it's bad at all because I don't think that.
Oh, and the production.
I just think that that song I have not recovered from. it being so overplayed.
That's okay.
But Nickelback, to be fair, at the time they came out, they were like the marijuana of, you know, that butt rock scene. They were like the gateway. They opened the floodgates to all of this.
That's the worst part, though. Yeah, because then there was like Theory of a Dead Man and all that other. Oh my God, horrible.
But just if you look horrible. At it for what it was, at the time when it was just Nickelback and that was a new sound that was not what it is right now, it's not that bad. And it's pretty catchy. And the lyrics maybe are a little bit dumb, but I mean, come on. If you've ever listened to the radio, there are a lot of lyrics that are a little bit dumb.
Well, that's just like your opinion, man. we can agree to disagree on that one, Marielle, and that is absolutely fine. Anyway, so you're in love with Newfound Glory, and what made you say, I need to not just listen to this, but I need to do this. Like, I need to get a guitar and I need to sing. Like, how did that happen?
Well, my sister, I have a twin sister, and she was really into, like, Good Charlotte and Linkin Park and Sum 41. Those were her favorite bands. And so she wanted to play bass and be, like, this rad chick bassist. And at this time, I believe that most of what I listened to was, like, Bright Eyes and, like, Curses and those Saddle Creek kind of bands.
Yeah.
This was when I was, like, in high school now. And so my dad bought her a bass for... I guess I want a guitar, too, if she wants a bass.
Okay.
And my dad got her a bass for Christmas, like, she really, really wanted. And he got me a guitar, and I guess he figured, you know, he plays guitar, too, so if I never played it, he would. And my sister never played bass.
Yep.
She did for a little bit, kind of, but I just really took to playing guitar, and I was a poet. I went to school to study poetry, actually.
Oh, cool.
And I sort of found when I was in high school, like, especially listening to Bright Eyes and Bob Dylan and things that were more folk like that, I was like, you know, I could really put the kind of poetry I'm writing and stuff into a song that would make more people listen to it than, like, make more people hear it and it more accessible than a poem on a page.
Yeah.
So, and especially because they were, like, all the people that I really respected, just, like, Conor Oberst is amazing. Like, he's so amazing, but he's a dude with an average voice who's playing guitar. You know what I mean?
Right.
So
you felt like, you could do it. If he could do it, you could do it.
Yeah. I was like, if he could do that, then maybe I could do it too. And so I started playing, and I went to college for poetry, and I ended up also applying to their, as a minor, their songwriting program.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it was cool. And sort of, I never really entertained it as, like, a career choice. I just sort of did it and played some shows on campus with my friends. I played maybe, like, 2 shows in New York City, and that was it. And that was, like, a big deal.
Of course, yeah.
And then when I turned, like, 21 and I graduated from college, now we're getting to, like, more recent times, I went on tour with Man Overboard. Like, we started playing. I booked a tour for us, just the first tour ever, because I was in between jobs. I was working at a parenting magazine.
Okay.
And then I wasn't anymore. And so I booked this tour, and we went on it, and we started noticing that people were singing along to our songs, and we were like, that's really crazy. Like,
yeah.
I don't even know how they heard this stuff. Because it was not something that we were pursuing, like, heavily or anything like that. Like, we'd put some songs online, and that was it.
It's crazy how that happens, I know.
Yeah. I noticed, like, people singing our songs and stuff, and I mean, so... It was like 3 people singing a song, and then the next time we went, there were like 5, and I was like, I can't even believe this. And then we played this festival that we drove all night to get to, and it was a small DIY fest, and everybody there was singing the words to our songs, and I was just like, I couldn't believe it at all. So I was like, maybe this is something we could do, but I still don't really know. And then we got a friend to put out a record on her label, kind of like, and she was sort of managing us. And I gotta say, she was a really great manager. But she got us on tour with Man Overboard. And at first I was really nervous. I was like, I don't know if I can go out on tour, do this. Like, I have to have a job or something. And, but then I decided to go for it anyway. And once I saw how Man Overboard operated and the kind of stuff that they did, like, just when I saw how, like, a real tour operated, I was like, this is really not far off from what we're doing, and this really is an attainable goal.
Sure, yeah.
And during that time, I was also talking to Chad Gilbert from Newfound Glory, which blew my mind.
Right, because it's like the whole reason that you even play music is that guy.
Yeah.
He wrote that riff. That's him, yeah. Anyways, go on.
Yeah, and so he had heard about us, and we were on tour, and like before the Man Overboard, it was a tour before the Man Overboard one. And I think at this point we'd only done like three tours and only like East Coast, never like even the Man Overboard one was like East Coast and Texas and we didn't go like full US or anything like that.
Right, right.
So we'd only ever been out for like a week and a half or 2 weeks at a time. And, I remember I just tweeted something about listening to their band and they tweeted back about liking one of our songs that was on this record that we had released and recorded in literally my mom's basement. Like we literally recorded it in my mom's basement and I couldn't believe it. And so he had messaged me and was like, hey, do you have any demos? I'd really like to produce you. And I was like, no, I don't have any demos. I mean,
like, hold on. And you're running to your computer to record something.
I was like, what do? I don't have anything. Like, I don't even know how to record something. Like, we just tried to figure out how to do this in my mom's basement. I was like, I don't know how to get a demo. It's like, what is a demo? Like, what is an appropriate demo to send somebody?
Sure, yeah.
I didn't know any of this. And I was like, also, I'm very shy. And I was very much like, I don't want to be that person who hits him up later, too. And is like, if I had demos right now, I would have sent it to him. But like, I don't want to be a person down the line like, hey, remember that time you said you were interested in my demos like 5 months ago? Well, here are demos. Like, check out my band. Because that's really obnoxious. And I'm sure
he's the one that asked you for them. I don't know. I don't think that's, you know.
I know he asked me for it, but I felt like so much time had passed that I didn't want to like be like, hey, check out my band. Do you remember me? I don't know. I'm really shy.
Okay.
And I don't like asking people for favors. But, you know, we went on tour with Man Overboard, like I said, and that's kind of when I started to realize that it was something I could do.
It was for real, yeah.
Yeah. And when I saw especially how much money the band right above us was making, which was not a lot at all, but it was a lot to me to make off of music, you know what I mean, at the time.
Yeah. Well, no one, let's be honest, no one's really getting rich, you know, but if you can stay afloat, then that's generally the goal here.
Well, that's what I saw. I was like, this is like pretty much staying afloat almost. So
that would
be really tight.
Staying afloat almost.
I mean, they were like the two of four, two of five, whatever it was. So, yeah. I mean, they were awesome and they inspired me as being two of five and how successful they were. And so Chad hit me up while I was on this tour and was like, I'm kind of offended that you didn't tell me that you're going out on tour with my friends. Like, I'm trying to help you and you didn't even tell me that you're doing this. And I was like, oh my God, now I've offended him. And he was actually serious. And I thought that he just said that to be nice or something.
Right.
I don't know.
Right. Okay.
Like, he's actually serious and I've offended him. And since then, I did send him my demos because once he hit me up again, I felt like he was serious and I wasn't going to be annoying. And then he produced our record and it's been what it is since.
Yeah. So so are you going to work with him again in the future? Do you hope to?
Yeah. I mean, he's amazing. He's an amazing songwriter. He is so smart.
Yeah.
I know for this album, I wanted to do something a little bit different.
Sure. No, we talked about that.
Yeah, but, I mean, I'd always love to work with him. He's amazing.
Yeah, that's awesome. No, that's a really cool story, you know, to realize, like, you know, for me, it would be Metallica. If James Hetfield called me and wanted to produce my band, that would be the same thing as what happened to you. So I love that
story.
I mean,
story, that would be really cool,
hearing,
too.
Oh, yeah, it would be. Man, Enter Sandman, what a great song. I'm just messing with you now. That's awesome. No, hey, we've thanks for doing this. Anything else you want to add? I know we talked a lot at the beginning about some of the recent stuff, and you know, we've gotten through, you know, a lot of your story of how you kind of got here, but there's so much more to talk about. So maybe down the road, we can do another episode.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, what else is going on with you? Anything else that you want to kind of tell the people?
I feel like I've told everyone, you know, what I'm up to.
Yeah.
What time is it even? I feel like I'm like late for my recording session.
Well, it's 11:30 a.m. now, so they're not going to start without you, I don't think.
Yeah, I'm going to be late, but I'm going to guess that they're not going to start without me.
No, I think you're good to go. All right. Well, hey. Well, thank you so much for doing this, and all the best with everything, and hang in there. I know it's really difficult what you're going through right now.
Thank you.
Thank you, Marielle.
All right. Bye.
You have a great day. Okay. Bye.
You too.
So there's my conversation with Marielle Loveland of Candy Hearts. It really sucks that she's going through such a hard time right now, and I wish her the best in moving on from this and moving forward. And it's great to hear that she's in the studio. She's working on some new music and also going back on tour, which I think will be very good for her. As always, we'll leave you with some music. I am very tempted to play Enter the Sandman by Metallica right now. Enter Sandman. I can't even say it wrong. But I will not do that. Sorry, Marielle. And I would love to play some Newfound Glory too, but we're going to stick with the Candy Hearts track right here. This is I Miss You on Lead Singer Syndrome. And we'll see you next week. Part of me, and I just roll my eyes now.